Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on Fakala Duma Radio. This is Afangana Corner.
Good day and welcome to the car wash. This is episode number 22. On today's show, which clubs will be hit hardest by this crisis, World Cup bribery controversy, and Nurkovic, best Chiefs striker since who? But I am not alone in the studio. I have the one, the only Sean Roberts. How you doing?
Slew dog. Magnificent. Thank you. How are you, buddy?
All good, all good. And we also have the general himself, Deko Modise. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, and you, Slew?
All good, all good. We gotta, you know, get our vibe upbeat, and so we need one of Sean's famous jokes. Do you have a joke of the day, sir?
I do. Right. Where's the best place to shop for a new soccer kit?
Where?
New Jersey.
Wow.
Man.
Take off. Stretch. Oh, no. I'm stretching, too. Just felt cramps a bit, but I'm okay.
Well, from that, we move on to our first story of the day, and we decided to cover which PSL clubs, or actually not only PSL clubs, but which local football clubs will be hit hardest due to this crisis. And so I figured we would start at the top and work our way down. So let's start with the title race. Of course, Chiefs and Sundowns both still have a shot, if you look at the table, at earning the reported 39.5 million rand prize money for winning the PSL if either one were to be crowned champion. I'm sure it's the obvious assumption that Chiefs would be looking at that money a lot more, with a lot more thirst, I suppose, than Sundowns. But what do you guys think? Looking at the title race, who's hit the hardest by this crisis?
Well, it's both, because Sundowns for sure are still in with a chance. Chiefs, before the crisis came, were sort of struggling with a little bit of a form. But you know, if you put the money aside, Slew, there's a lot of bragging rights that come with winning with the league. Chiefs, we know they haven't won a title or a cup in the last 5 years. This is massive for Chiefs. Sundowns, trophy after trophy. So, but in terms of bragging rights, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you're right, Sean. I think when it comes to especially Kaizer Chiefs, looking at exactly like what Sean has said, it's been a while since they have won a trophy, and for the fact that, you know, this season they have been, you know, the main conversation on the PSL, not because they were playing well, but because they were on everybody's lips, and they were at some point there were 10 points or something like that. So it was very interesting season for Kaizer Chiefs, and it looked like, you know, they're about to achieve what they always wanted to achieve a couple of years now. And also look at how it affects them is now the supporters started coming to the games, and you know how Kaizer Chiefs fans are, once they start winning, they come in numbers to the game, so that increases the gate takings, and that increases also the merchandise, how they sell the merchandise as well, and the sponsor exposure. So when that stops, none of those happens, so now they get affected besides the actual prize of winning the league, but the other revenues that they can actually make, start making money off, they start being affected, and I think that's the major thing. As for Sundowns, you can never say, because Sundowns always, it's a full stadium whenever they play a big team, but when they're not, irrespective of what form are they in, they're not a team that actually packed the stadium. But Kaizer Chiefs, you know, everywhere they go, it feels like a home game for them. But so I think for me, it's more on the fan side, on the gate takings, the merchandise, and the sponsor exposure, the money that they have from the sponsors. I think that affects their pocket a bit.
Definitely. And I think if you look at the top three teams, for example, Chiefs, Sundowns and Pirates, they're the only ones who have a real concern when it comes to the ticket earnings. Other clubs have actually come out and said, the owners have come out and said it's more so the broadcasting rights and that sort of thing that's going to impact them. And I think that's a nice segue into the relegation battle. Really, it's a fight for broadcasting rights. And so who gets impacted the most by this? I mean, AmaZulu's in the relegation battle. Black Leopards is there. I think Black Leopards are bottom of the table currently. And so who there gets impacted? Because I'm assuming it's the loser. It's whoever would get relegated, obviously, gets hit the hardest. But now that the season might not even finish, How do you think Black Leopards and AmaZulu feel about this entire crisis?
Yeah, Slu, also just to carry on what you're saying there, I know the PSL has come out and they've said that, well, they haven't said it directly, but each club is sort of okay till the end of May in terms of them receiving their monthly grant. So automatically that puts everyone in a little bit of ease. In terms of the relegation battle, yeah, I mean, if you look at AmaZulu and you look at Ajax, I mean, Ajax has got the most to gain and AmaZulu's got the most to lose. Or Swallows in that instance, they've got the most to gain. The difference in income in terms of broadcasting rights from the NFD all up to the PSL is staggering. I mean, we spoke about it previously on another podcast in terms of the playoff from the championship into the Premier League. I think that game's worth over £300 million all in all. So that's the most expensive game in the world. Obviously it's not to this level in South Africa, but you can see now what we're talking about. It's sort of make or break, and Ajax can't afford to have another season in the NFD, I can tell you that much.
You're right, Mr. Simon. Are you want to go back to Ajax and play there?
No, I'm done. Thanks, bud.
Okay. Thanks, bud. So for the relegation candidates, I think, of course, once you number last, of course, we know what's happening to you. But I just said I feel sad for AmaZulu, especially after winning the game against KZ Chiefs. Maybe they felt like, you know, this is the right time to actually start gaining momentum, because that's something that they've been waiting for the whole season. And then this happens as well. So, but other guys are probably, maybe they'll feel like, okay, now, at least now it's our actually time to actually look at ourselves and figure out what is it that we can do once the league resumes. Because I've got a strong feeling that it will resume, but once it resumes, it's going to be back to back. So there won't be any time for team to take rest, because it's going to be back to back so that the league can finish. So now this is actually time for teams like AmaZulu, Black Leopards and Polokwane CT, the Barokas, the Cheapers, to actually figure out what's going to happen to them and how they're actually strategizing on escaping this relegation battle. And as for Ajax and Swallows, yeah, look at Ajax, dude, in terms of how they're running the team, you know, with the shoestring budget, you know, with not so many resources, you know.
Coaches leaving.
Dude, everybody leaves, you know. People are fighting. There's accusations of bribery, whatever the case may be. They've been through a lot. And then when they finally feel like, you know what, since we're a team of a stature that belongs in the PSL, this is our chance. And they've done very well this season. And they're a team that actually we're looking at, like, they might even get automatic a promotion. But now this happens, they get affected a lot. Swallows have invested a lot in your Lebogang Mokoena, your matter, the experienced players, actually try and also have the young stars, the younger one, the new owners as well, going back to Dobsonville, playing. There's a lot of investment with the shoestring budget still. So those teams actually do feel like they've been let down by what's happening right now. So I just hope that with what the PSL is trying to plan, if it continues, let it continue also in the NFD at the same time, so that everything, when it ends at the same time, so that we know who gets relegated, we know exactly who wins the league, who gets promoted.
Agreed. And just as a note, looking at the PSL table as it stands right now, Black Leopards are bottom with 20 points, and then it's Baroka, Polokwane City and AmaZulu all tied on 23 points. So a very tight race. But I think the main reason why AmaZulu sits so heavy in our minds is all of the controversy that they've had over recent months with the running of the team, players being suspended. And I suppose one last question here. I mean, you know, we can touch on Glad Africa again, because there's also the question of the 3 million rand prize money that they have this season as compared to previous ones. But with AmaZulu, what do you make of the structure of the team, how the players must feel in light of recent suspensions? Do you think that this is a time for them to kind of fix everything, or does this come at the wrong time for them?
Slu, you know, if we look at AmaZulu the past 3-4 seasons, they've been in this conversation every single year, bottom of the league. So you've got to look at what's actually happening behind the scenes at an administrative point of view. And I know we've spoken at length of this before in a previous podcast, but it's something has to really, really change at the top. Because, you know, yes, players can do so much, you know, but coaches coming and going, senior players getting banned from the club, you know, and you're looking at those players' names, and you've got to say to yourself, there's no ways that these players would have done what they've been convicted of doing. So something is very, very wrong there. But just to answer your question, now is the time to change. They have no choice. Guys are fighting for new contracts. Guys have got families to feed. You know, it's but this is a cross board. If there is a time to change, whatever's happening at AmaZulu, now is the time. And I do believe, you know, they've got Monip in charge now as well, who brings a whole different game plan. I've got a sneaky suspicion they're gonna stay up.
What happened to you? You're not guy today. I think with AmaZulu, I think the biggest problem is trying to stick to the culture itself, not trying to move with the times. I think they still believe that, you know, we used to be AmaZulu of this 1972 type of thing. They're still running the team like their fans are those old people. They don't understand they need to move with times. And this, hence you see even the way they sign players, the way they've been doing the same thing all over again. Mm. If you remember, there was a point where they signed Jerry Skhosana and Pauline Ntlhanya at the same time to come and play for AmaZulu. I think AmaZulu was in relegation at the time. Again. So now it's always been the trend of AmaZulu. They never actually believe in the development structure. They do that, but they don't do that as often. They always want to buy fringe players. They always want to buy players, 4, 5, 6, 7 players, and then every time when they start a season, it's a new team. They're always rebuilding. There's no continuity within their team. Yeah. And hence they find themselves in this situation. They can't be surprised because every season they're rebuilding, they want to buy success instead of being patient. They need to understand that certain teams to find themselves where they are, it's because of the consistency, and it's because it's been a plan for like 4 or 5 years plan. So AmaZulu wants to have a team that will actually try and win the league this season. Next season they buy 18 players. Those players need to play the whole season. Now two coaches, it can't happen like that. If you're a team of AmaZulu structure with a big name like that, with a big following in Durban like that, you can't afford to get relegated, because you know you're affecting so many people. By doing so, bring in people with fresh minds, new ideas, build a team for 5 years. Look at the age group of the player, the kind of players that you're signing. Have a young coach or have an experienced coach and that understands the plan. Let everybody that comes in within the team falls in the plan, not the other way around. I think AmaZulu, if they can change those type of things, they might even survive.
They might have a fighting chance there. Moving on, we have the international news desk. Some interesting news coming out of Germany. So the Bundesliga is back in training, but with a twist. Munich, Dortmund, Mönchengladbach, and Wolfsburg all reportedly showed up for training, and they're playing in groups of 5, but without any contact. Now, I haven't seen images from this, so I wasn't able to see if they have some form of masks. I know players generally do have those masks, especially when they have flu or something like that. So I'm hoping they're playing with those. But what do you guys make of this news, and what do you think it signals to the rest of you know, the European leagues and maybe even the PSL in terms of how to deal with this crisis?
Yes, Lou, I think for this, for Germany in particular, it's just about, and I think one of the coaches said online last night, it's just nice to see the boys with the ball at their feet again, you know. It's not necessarily about fitness tests or whatever. It's just about getting out there, getting the ball at their feet. But Germany is very different to the PSL. They've already gone and said that the Bundesliga will resume by May the 2nd. So that's only 3 weeks away. And the Dutch League by the 16th of June. So it's a bit longer. But in terms of training, you know, it's a bizarre one. They're obviously not showering together. But, you know, it's just about getting on the pitch, getting the feel of the ball again, and possibly working on a couple of set pieces, but nothing too strenuous.
Yeah, and also, Sean, if you also think about it, those teams have got the facilities to do that. You know, they can bring in players in 5 groups, even the pitches are 5. They can do whatever they want. The PSL, most of the teams don't even have a training pitch, so it's going to be very, very difficult for us. And also, what helps them as well is that they've already decided on a date to come back. We haven't. We don't know what's going on. So I think once we know when is the league going to resume, it'll be better for teams to start making, you know, decisions on how to go about it. Because I feel very bad for the players, because at the end of the day, when the everything resumes, the fans will always remember that, hey guys, we want to win. We don't care whether you are quarantined. We want to win. And the players are the ones actually going to be suffering because of the fitness levels are so low. They haven't been doing much. You know, there's so much that you can do at exercising at home. But I just feel like, I just hope that whenever it comes back, whoever that is really chief, is really, whoever it's not, I feel sorry for them.
I agree.
Yeah. Interestingly, I saw this interview with, not to change sports, but with LeBron James, where he was speaking about how the NBA should go about coming back in terms of how long you give teams to get fully fit, for the kind of postseason, the bigger matches. He suggested, you know, a few weeks of non-competitive games, and then a few weeks of competitive games, and then back to normal. As former players yourselves, I'm sure this is a difficult one for you guys to answer, but how long do you think should be given to teams in terms of training before the PSL officially starts playing matches again?
Yes, Lee, I mean, you know, these circumstances are very different. You know, each preseason we usually used to between 6 and 8 weeks. Obviously, they're not going to get that this time around. Mm. You know, I think what LeBron is saying is a stretch for PSL standards. There's no way we can have 6 weeks before, you know, three weeks of just normal games and three weeks of competitive games. There's no way that's going to happen in the PSL. Mm. You know, best case scenario, if the clubs could get 2 weeks in terms of, you know, 10 days of high intensity training and a couple of games thrown in there, and then the rest of the games to be played behind closed doors, I think the PSL would have won their battle.
Yeah, for me, John, I think 3 weeks will be fair, because we're not speaking about a team that was not active like a month and a half ago. Mm. You know, the first 2 weeks as a team, especially the first week, which is important, is actually to bring the guys gradually, you know, just to remind the body that, hey, I'm still active. I think the second week is the one that is very crucial, because you can't push the guys too much, because you don't want to now start shocking the body and start having injuries. I think 3 weeks, I think it will be fair, because now that's what everybody's going to get anyway. So everybody's at a disadvantage whenever they start. But I don't think it'll be advisable for teams, especially at this time of the season, to start playing friendlies in between. Mm. You know, you might want to play amongst yourself, because you're trying to avoid injuries, you're trying to avoid so much contact. So, but you know what, Sean? I think that even if they can say like now, even if they give us a month to come back, I doubt we'll ever have even see the intensity of the game the way we saw it before the coronavirus started. I think we're at the momentum that was so exciting. Mm. I think now when you come back, we're going to come back to teams that are still struggling with fitness. They're going to play a game very slowly. It's going to be very technical. It's not going to be exciting anymore. I just hope that I'm wrong.
Yeah, I was about to say, I hope you're wrong. I really do hope you're wrong, but I tend to agree with you.
I'm sure we have to try and get maybe a fitness specialist on the line to explain, because one thing that, you know, the NBA and basketball doesn't have to worry about is something that our soccer players do have to worry about is there's also international fixtures to catch up. That involves a lot of travel, and also playing those games so close together. Mm. You know, I don't want the league to come back and suddenly everybody's getting injured and stuff like that. So yeah, I hope that there's a solid plan in place. But moving swiftly forward, big story. And I think I recognize this story from years ago, but now it's coming up again because of the Qatar World Cup. But there is bribery controversy again. A new indictment by the United States Department of Justice has revisited the idea of corruption surrounding the 2010 World Cup, and it also singles out Russia and Qatar for also paying bribes for their World Cup. In this country, bribery, we're used to this thing. So so what do you guys make of this news, and are you surprised that Russia and Qatar is also involved in the same thing?
Oh, I mean, you know, the minute we saw Qatar to host the 2022 World Cup, you automatically thought, there's no ways. What's happened here?
Of course.
Do you know what I mean? What's happened here? So to answer, Slu, no, I'm not surprised one, but am I surprised there's bribery involved in South Africa hosting the World Cup? You know, I want to say yes, I'm surprised, but I'm not. I'm not surprised. It's sad. I'm just trying to think of the guy's name. I'm trying to Google the guy, head of CONCACAF, who was involved in it. Mm. But what's your view, Teko? What's your view on all this?
For me, I'm not surprised at all. Number one, I remember we we were trying to bid for it, and then we lost, I think, with one vote at some point. And then we came back again and we won. Of course, coming to learn that, you know, we're going to host the World Cup was great. But I knew for a fact that, you know, we were not ready, number one, to host it. Of course, we did a magnificent job, but we were not ready as a country. We had to start everything from scratch. That other people got paid us, or they paid other people. I mean, it's South Africa. We know that exists. And to look at now we have to go to Qatar for a World Cup. I mean, really, Chief, I don't even know if there's a league in Qatar. And also the conditions, from what I've heard. So now they want to build a stadium that has air conditioning and air.
I mean, move the tournament to December, January.
Dude, you know what I'm saying? So it affects the leagues now, but that's what it is. But I guess also with FIFA, it's trying to move the World Cups in different, you know, in different continents and all that. We understand that. But also with Russia, Chief, who would say no to Russia? Who would say no to Russia? You can't. So obviously, Chief, whenever there's power, there's money. And whenever you give money, Chief, you do have power. And we know that this thing, we're all human beings. Human beings are the ones actually in charge of these committees. They can get bribed anytime.
Yeah. And I think what this speaks to also is, I remember when I first heard this $10 million bribe story, I think it must have been about 2015 that I heard this story about the 2010 World Cup. The first thing I said is, this isn't like South Africa. Yeah, we have corruption and bribery here. We know this, but this isn't a South Africa thing. This is a FIFA thing. People forget how corrupt FIFA has been in the past.
Oh, man, it's so sad, hey? Here we are talking about a game that we love, and there's still so much going on behind the scenes that breaks my heart. And it's not going to change, Lou, unfortunately.
Wherever there's
money involved, wherever there's a lot of money involved, there's some shady, shady dealings.
Before. First you get the money, then you get the power. I can't remember what movie that's from. But moving on, we have an interesting one. Thabang Monare and his coach, Gavin Hunt, both have opposing views on what should happen. You know, Thabang was the one who set this whole conversation in motion. He's quoted as saying, look, if the league has to stop now, I think it's only fair to crown the team that is on top of the league table. And then Gavin Hunt came out and said, we have to finish the league. You can't have a situation where you don't finish and give it to a certain team. It doesn't work like that. Then rather just scrap the season. I mean, these guys have to sit down and just have a debate, I feel like.
They're just making unnecessary news, aren't they? I mean, it's
of course.
Look, I agree with the coach on this one. I think we spoke about it at length a week ago or 2 weeks ago, that I do feel that there has to be a result with this league. There's just been too much effort, too much money, too much time, too much blood, too much sweat, too much tears involved in this season, and there has to be a winner, however they do it. But they have to play as well. They've got to finish the games.
Yeah, they have to finish the games, especially, man, you look at this season, it was one of those special seasons. You know, it wasn't just like your normal regular seasons where you see Mamelodi Sundowns been dominating for the last 6 years. We saw a different side of the league this season. So I think there should be a winner, irrespective of who wins it. I think obviously we'll remember this season of things that happen in between. But to be fair to everyone, I mean, there's a lot of investment, especially with our feelings. You know how fans are. So I think it would be fair for everyone if we find out exactly who won and let those people be crowned, and who get relegated, let's give them the jerseys so that they can reuse them in the NFD.
Let me add some spice to this story. Do you think maybe the boy Thabang Monare might be angling for a big money move?
Well, but that's not the way to go, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the way to go. But there has been talk about Monare going to Chiefs, hasn't it? So, interesting, Slew. I never thought of that. But it's nice to see Gavin to sort of come back and counteract on what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Slew, you might be right. Looking at the George, maybe if it is true that he actually moved to Sundowns, there might be a gap there for another midfielder to come in. But we all know how Kaizer Chiefs are. They're waiting for you to be free. They're not gonna buy any player that is still in contract. So I don't know where the situation of Monare is, but I think is just he must also look at it as if he was in a relegation zone, because now we're speaking of if the league stops, we need to give it to the people that actually are on top. So what about the ones that are on the bottom, when we know that they're trying to gain momentum to come up? What are you saying about them? But I understand his angle as well. Mm. He's trying to put, you know, some little bit of cookies, some little bit of cheese there for the mouse to come through. I see you, Munare.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he should have said it next year. We all know Chiefs might not be able to buy anybody for a couple of years anyway. So.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we go and see. But we have a feature on this program called The Secret Footballer. Basically, if you look at the back page of our sister publication, Kickoff, they have a secret footballer where a PSL player or a local footballer basically tells a story anonymously. And it's usually our guy, Sean Roberts, who singles these ones out. And what story do you have for us today, my guy?
Yes, Lou, I don't know who it is, hence the name Secret Footballer. But the story goes like this. So when the United States women's team spoke about equal pay, they were fighting for all our rights as women. They went to the World Cup in France and won it. And after that, they said they wanted equal pay after showing people in their country that they deserve it. In the USA, the women's national team jerseys sell more than the men's team, and they have the right to ask for equal pay. But if you look at the South African women's team, our level is so poor and amateurish, and most fans do not even know who the names of the teams are and the names of the players. We don't even have a proper structure of women's football, and we don't have the development in the women's game at heart. Bafana players got more from the African Nations Cup per match than the Banyana at the FIFA World Cup. With the two tournaments cannot even compare. If we are fair, Bafana players were supposed to get paid less, because you cannot compare a World Cup with AFCON. World Cup is much bigger, much bigger.
Mm.
Hmm. It's a... It's a tough one.
Who is he?
I have a couple guesses. I do have a couple guesses.
I have a feeling who it is. I'm not going to mention.
I have a feeling.
But I think, you know, she sort of answered a question in terms of the intro, because it does say that, you know, the American woman sells more shirts than the men's team. Mm. So in effect, they are more marketable than the men's team. In effect, they should get paid similar or more. I agree with that. Mm. But if you look at the South African woman's setup, or lack thereof, there is no setup really.
Of course.
You can't understand where they're coming from, and I understand our gender equality, et cetera, but I think this is a little bit bigger than in terms of, right, we go into a World Cup, we want to get paid the same as the men's. It's a tough one. I don't know where I stand on this, to be honest. I'm on the fence. It's a real tough one.
Hey, Sean Roberts, being on the fence.
I'm the fence. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wow. I think I understand from a player's point of view when they say they need to be, you know, equal payment, and also looking at the tournament and how big the other one is and all that stuff. I understand that. But also it's also come back to like the development stuff, the infrastructure of just the whole setup of Banyana teams, because even myself, like most of them, I don't even know their names. I don't even know who they're playing for.
How dare you?
No, I'm just being honest. Some of them I don't even, I know the ones that are probably like prominent names. Mm. I know those ones, but most of them I don't even know. We don't even know when Bafana Banyana is playing. We probably maybe know 2 days before. Mm. You know, I don't think they put on a platform or they market them enough for actually people to get interested to go watch. If you remember, there was a team that called Amatlukluk, the under 23s. Mm. Mm. Dude, everywhere you go, They'll market those games. You'll see the buses. I'm like, look, we always wanted to go watch them. Even though sometimes at some point we never knew who Siyabonganom Vete was or who Simba Marumo was. But we always wanted to go and learn about those players. If they can do that with the Banyana team, they might also inspire other girls to actually try and play the game more seriously and get developed. Or maybe teams themselves and try to have a development start. Because you must understand, having a development in J on its own, it's expensive. Mm. And we do, some of the teams don't even have the kind of infrastructures. We understand that. But now that's when we ask the league, the SAFA, to get involved. And that's what SAFA is doing. It's got the league on its own. It involves all these ladies that are getting sported there. Hence they go, you see them now. There's a little bit of a door open now for them to go overseas, which is great. We just hope that from day on, there's going to be more of them going overseas. And once that happens, it's going to create a demand for Banyana to actually, for the fans to come and see them. Then they become marketable. Then they become brand ambassadors. And then we can speak about equality.
So basically, what you're saying, it's a process.
It's a process.
Yeah.
They need to be patient. It can't just happen. Just because you're playing the World Cup against Fiji and then I'm playing AFCON against Ghana, it's the same. It's not the same.
Yeah, I'll say this. The one area where I disagree with the secret footballer here is you can't compare Banyana Banyana to the U.S. women's national team.
You can't.
Here's the thing. U.S. women's national team was one of the biggest stories in football, period, last year. They were as champions, and also the fact that, one, the U.S. men's team did not even qualify for the 2018 World Cup. U.S. women's football team won the FIFA Women's World Cup. And again, you know, there's the shirt sales. If we were to bring up Banyana Banyana shirt sales, let's all be honest here, they're not, you know, comparable to, you know, Percy Tau Bafana jerseys Bafana jerseys.
Are you telling me that you do not have a Banyana Banyana jersey?
I can guarantee you I ain't got one. I wouldn't mind one. I haven't even seen them, to be honest, though. But that's my only thing. But in terms of everything else, development, we do need to invest, because we can't just sit back and have the excuse of like, oh, the men's game is bigger. No, we have to invest in order to make the women's game better. And so that's my only point of disagreement, is the U.S. women's national team is already at that point.
Imagine if we can have, like, you know, we do have an Asidlale Itiski or whatever, I don't know what it's called, the MDC games. I think it's called Asidlale. Imagine if you have the ladies teams that are doing that every week, you know, that can improve the game. But also it's up to the PSL also to invest in those type of initiative, because of the put money, the unit sponsors for that to happen. So I think it's going to be a long process, but I think what also gives us that encouragement as well is to see these players, our players, going to these top countries, and not only top countries to buy clothes and what, they're going to top teams. AC Milan, Chief. You know, that's big, dude. So I think once we get more of those players going overseas, I think it'll open so many doors.
Agreed. Moving swiftly forward, we have a quick little debate here that I want to spark. Samir Nurkovic, sorry? Wow. You've already had your joke of the day, Sean.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much.
But Samir Nurkovic has made a splash since joining Chiefs last August. He already has 11 goals in the PSL this season. He's in the hunt for the Golden Boot. Obviously, Gabadinho leads the race there. But he has the most goals, I think, in the PSL for Chiefs in a single season since Bernard Parker of 2014, who I think got the Golden Boot with just 10 goals. I think that was one of the lowest scoring seasons for strikers. But I need to ask the question. Nurkovic, who is he the best striker since? And I think we can start with Bernard Parker. Who do you take? Samir Nurkovic at his best or Bernard Parker at his best?
Tickle. I think I'd love to hear your opinion on this.
Under the bus, I feel.
Sure.
Look, Chief, I think these are two different type of strikers, you know, with different strengths and all that stuff. And also they're playing in two different Kaizer Chiefs teams. And I think for us to compare, I think the only thing that we can compare them with is just putting the ball, you know, in the back of the net. In terms of how they play, they're two different type of players. Bernard Parker, it's not a big, strong guy that will find him in last post and do all the stuff. He always, you know, make deeper runs. He holds well to the. He's got his own characteristics of how he plays. But I think, let me add something, Sluk. I think if Nurkovic was a South African player right now, the way that he plays, everybody will be speaking about Nurkovic being a footballer of the year. Because everybody, when they speak about Nurkovic, they only speak about top goal scorer. They don't understand the guys, how he has played from not known to become that effective and that dominant in a team that hasn't won a league in so many years. He had brought faith into the team.
Actually, now, Steve Compella actually, in a recent article, mentioned Nurkovic as a potential player of the season. He was the first coach that I saw name him.
Thank you. So the rest, the other ones are on the bench. So Nokovic is if you have to speak about the players that have been so effective this season, that have done so much, it's Nokovic and Lebo Manya. We can't deny that. We cannot deny that. And I think the reason why Nukovic is not put on the same pedestal as Lebo Manyama, because Lebo Manyama is a South African player. We like promoting our own when it suits us. Mm. But also let's give credit where it's due. Mm. Nukovic has been the very dominant this season. And you could see when Kaizer Chiefs plays without Nukovic. We haven't seen Kaizer Chiefs playing without Manyama. Of course, in the beginning of the season because he was struggling, whatever. But now we've seen how Kaizer Chiefs struggle without Nukovic and the presence that he has within the team. And now being a footballer of the year, you've been chosen because of the influence that you have.
Mm.
So now he's an influential player. When he's on the pitch, Kaizer Chiefs stand 85-90% chance of winning the game. So that's the guy that is very dominant. I'll take Nukovic at his top of his game any day.
Mm. Sure now.
Mm, no, he took the words out of my mouth. It's just, you know, in terms of like a foreign player, an Eastern European striker coming into South Africa and make such an impact that he has is mind-boggling. And I can only really think back to a sort of Brocky when he first arrived as well, when he made such an immediate impact. And a lot of credit needs to go to the Chiefs scouting department here, because what they've brought in is something fresh, something we haven't seen in a very long time. And I do agree with Teko that Nurkovic on his day is unstoppable.
Yes, sir.
For sure. And, you know, you mentioned foreign strikers coming to the league and making a splash. For Chiefs, the last person to do that really before Nurkovic in the striker role was Knowledge Musona, who scored a 17 back in the 2010-2011 season. And I think here's where it gets real tough. Nurkovic at his best versus Knowledge Musona at his best.
Ish.
Thoughts?
Wow.
For me, I'll tell you this. I'll take Nukovic for the fact that Nukovic is. I've seen how Kaizer Chiefs are playing. I've seen him, you know, the way, the attitude that he has. Nukovic is not just a striker that just wait for the ball and just link up with the other players. That guy also comes back and defend.
Mm.
Like, he works hard for the team. He's so selfless. Like, he gives himself to the team. He gets yellow card because he's trying to tackle there. Sometimes I feel like this guy's unnecessary, but it's got that strong mentality. And when you compare that with Musona and them, those are talented guys. They only rely on the talent and the skill. Nukovic has, that's why I'm saying that Nukovic on his day, I'll play with him because I know that even if it's 85 minutes, we need 5 minutes to defend a 1-0 win away. Nukovic will help us to damn and defend. So I'll take Nukovic and day.
Yeah, I agree, Teko. I mean, we can go through the list there, Aslu, but in terms of the Kaizer Chiefs squad at the moment and how Nurkovic fits into that, that's what we're saying, is that he's absolutely unstoppable, and I would choose Nurkovic any day.
Okay, I agree there, but going through the list, the next guy we have is Collins Mbesuma. And
nah, that was stupid.
I think 25 goals in a single season. Gents.
Nah. Mm. No, that one was stupid. Mbesuma came here with the gunpoint, and no, Mbesuma was a dominant force. I mean, he was a big guy, you know, powerful shot, and you know that he would just turn and just score, and that was his game. And also, what helped him as well was, you know, David Khadebe used to be like a guy that actually, you know,
good player,
caused troubles. Mm. Yeah, it caused troubles for other teams. Once you're still focusing on David Khadebe's pace, and then Mbesuma will come through and score those goals. But also, he had a great season and he was very dominant at this time. But he wasn't a player like your Nukovic structure, where you come back and help the team in defense. Like I'm saying, the game has evolved. Back then, you didn't need a striker to come back and defend. But now, because of the game has evolved, and with looking at the structure of Nukovic, looking at the type of player that he is, compare them with any player in the PSL that has the same structure, and tell me if they have got the work ethic that Nukovic has. None of them has.
I think Mbesuma was a lot more selfish in a way, like you said, Teko. He didn't have to come tracking back, so he gave him a lot more opportunity to score. I think it was a 24-25 goals that season. So again, Slew, it's a good question, but it's very, very difficult to compare in terms of the style of play that was back then and the squad that Kaizer Chiefs have
and
now.
The squad, no. Thank you.
True. So I guess at the end of the day, we're saying that Nurkovic is really making a run at being one of the most I guess individually gifted players to have donned the jersey. And we're not saying that he's a GOAT. It's only been one season. But if he were to continue in this vein, you guys are saying that he has a shot at being one of the best strikers to ever put on this shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he continues like this the next 2-3 years, without a doubt. I mean, if he can score 100 goals for Chiefs over the next 2-3 years, I mean, he will be part of the Hall of Fame. And he's that good. And he's a team player. He's a good lad off the field as well. All the boys get along with him. And he's just absolute asset at the moment for Kaizer Chiefs.
True, man. I like the fact that he's a team player. And Slu, you'll be surprised of the names I've seen on Kaizer Chiefs' legend list. Yeah? So don't be surprised if Nukovic is there already. Because I've seen guys that scored one goal in their career at Kaizer Chiefs. But they're part of the legend. So I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, I'll definitely put Nukovic, even right now, in the Hall of Fame before, like, Mutaung Jr., for example. Like, I don't know, man.
No, man. Slu, come on. Put some respect on Kaizer Jr.
Kaizer Jr., would you take Kaizer Jr. over Nurkovic?
No. I'm not saying, but put some respect on the guy. I mean, that's dad's company, dude.
Yeah. True. My bad. Yeah, but moving on, we got this week in football history.
Today we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
So, back in 2013, this week in 2013, a pitch invader who assaulted a PSL match referee with a vuvuzela at a Chiefs Arrows match was granted 500 rand bail, and the incident caused the PSL to consider fencing the fans off from the field. I think they do that in like Turkey and Brazil as well, where they're just like, nah, you guys have to stay back, we don't trust you. Wow. And then this week back in 2001, Borussia Dortmund and Munich battled to a 1-1 lead draw. In that match, the referee showed 10 yellow cards and 2 reds to Bayern Munich, and then 2 yellow cards and a red to Dortmund for a single match record for the league, total of 15 cards. So feisty affair there. And then this week back in 2010, AFC Aldermaston were on the wrong end of a new English record after they lost their 40th straight match. And that's funny because also in 1981 this week, Auxerre defeated Nantes. Nantes were on home turf, and that ended a 5-year home unbeaten run for the hosts.
Wow.
So... wow. Hectic ones there.
Slu,
hey?
just to add in there, the first one you said, that gentleman who who was granted 500 rand bail. Interestingly enough, I think it was yesterday or the day before that Ronaldinho was granted bail of 18 million rand. So he's currently out of jail, under house arrest, and we are going to watch that closely and see what happens to him.
Yeah.
Damn, that's an update. We covered that story a couple of weeks back. So Ronaldinho is free.
Damn.
Hopefully he's free at last. So hopefully he stays safe. All of the lockdown stuff will at least keep him out of trouble, I hope, for a little bit.
He can't travel. I'm saying he can't travel, so he's safe for now.
Yeah, he can't travel. He can't do anything. So moving swiftly forward, we have a couple of potential transfer stories. First of all, we have Thulani Hlatswayo, a.k.a. Tyson, potentially moving to Pirates. Now, his agent has come out and said he's happy at Wits. He's contracted there until 2022 after he signed an extension last August. But, the Bucks might still be willing to give it a shot. According to transfermarket.com, Tyson's worth about 26 million rand, especially with this extension. That'll probably be what Wits around the price range they're looking for. But I'll ask you guys, does the move still make sense to you, Tyson moving to Pirates?
Well, I can tell you something now. Pirates won't pay 26 million rand for Tyson. They won't pay anything near to that. So whether there's a few players thrown in the mix part of the deal, that's, we can only wait and see. It's an interesting one. I think Tyson has gone out publicly and said he's always wanted to play for Pirates. I see him as a Pirates player. He's a very, very good player. I know he can play either right back or central defender. He's captained our country. He's captain Wits. He'll be a massive loss to Wits, that's for sure. But also, if you're looking at Bidvest Wits and what they're doing is how they're cutting costs, who knows, hey? For me, sure, it still makes sense. I don't see why not. Whether it's going to happen is a completely different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this issue has been spoken about for long now, and I think, I don't think this time. I'm sure with what Sean is saying, Orlando Pirates will never pay that amount of money for a defender. Never. And I think also what will help Tyson if he really, really wants to move to Orlando Pirates is when he extended his contract with the Vets. I hope there's a buying out clause in that contract that will help him actually to bounce. Because I'm sure he had probably ambitions to go overseas, whatever the case might be. So it's important for every player to have a buyout clause. So I'm sure he has it, but I doubt that it's 26 million rand. But if it does happen that he goes to Orlando Pirates, he'll be a good addition. Because you need a new face, you know, somebody that will actually help, whether it's Happy Jail or whether it's Nyaos or whoever that is at the back there. Maybe he might be the guy that actually brings confidence in terms of defensive stuff at Orlando Pirates. But yet again, the pressure of him moving from Bidvet Vets to Orlando Pirates and being the captain of the national team, he must understand what kind of pressure that is putting himself in. That's not Vets. That's not Bafana Bafana. That's a weekly basis where the fans are... They want nothing else but wins. And then now somebody needs to be accountable for the losses. So they're going to pick some. That's Orlando Pirates. Always want one player to be blamed for the losses and then everybody else for the wins. So now he needs to understand the kind of pressure if it happens that he goes there. So, and for me, if he goes to Orlando Pirates, he shouldn't play right back. Because once he gets skinned by one player, you know, he gets blamed for one game, he's done. So he needs to play in a stronger position as a center back, be there. It doesn't even necessarily have to captain the team. Just be a center back, do what you're supposed to do, score a couple of goals for Orlando Pirates, you know, set pieces, be effective, be somebody that contributes to the game. Because you're not beat Vets, there's so many things that you can get away with. Because it's not a team that is on the spotlight, it's not a team that everybody actually watches whenever they play.
Yeah.
But at Orlando Pirates, every game is as important. So you're going to be at the spotlight, you're going to be looked at very, very differently. So I think it's a challenge that every player needs. It's a challenge that every player, not every player actually can sustain or even play under. But Tyson has a strong heart. Like Shona said, he's a very good player. So it's only fair for him to test himself, you know, playing those type of games week in, week out, and justify himself as well. Maybe to other ones that have actually thought that he's not maybe probably a good leader or capable candidate for being a national team captain. So this is the chance. But for 26 million, playing.
Just to add in there, Teko, Slu, I stand to be corrected here, but I don't think Pirates have extended Happy Jele's stay as yet. I know his contract is up, but he does not have a new contract. So that's also some, you know...
Sean,
what do you say? I mean,
at that place they call it a Park Town. A Park Town. When your contract expires, you don't call and ask, my contract expired. You need to wait. They'll tell you.
Like Chiefs.
Yeah, these teams, my friend, they're the same. They're from the same cloth. When your contract expires, you must wait. They'll come and decide and tell you, okay, sharp, we need to renegotiate. Come, let's talk about it.
No,
especially 100%. when you're a long-serving member like Happy Jail.
There's
no way. We can't see Happy Jail playing at Amazul. I mean, really. He knows, because he has seen this happening with so many players before. So when you're at that position, you must understand you're the captain of the team. You need to wait.
Yeah,
and it's not because of probably they're trying to look at Tlatshwayo or securing this one. It's because that's how they run things. You've been here for so long, you're a family. Now you're part of family. So let's sort out the other ones. We'll come back to you to be the last one because you're a family. You know how we run things.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Fair enough,
for sure. So we'll keep an eye on that one, see how it goes. Obviously, the whole transfer window is going to be affected by COVID, so we don't even know when these negotiations would be able to start. To be fair, but moving swiftly forward, the last story we have here is the potential return of Leonardo Castro to Sundowns. He, of course, has yet to extend with Chiefs. His contract expires in June. He has previous connections with Sundowns, used to play there. Apparently, he didn't leave on good terms, I've heard. We'll see. I mean, what do you guys make of his potential return? Do you think that he would join Maluleka out the door?
Slu, we don't know.
Nicely put, Slu.
Yeah. Slu, in terms of Castro going to Sundowns, I honestly feel as long, and I could be wrong, but as long as Pizzo is there, I don't think there will be a chance to come in, because what happens if you leave on bad terms, which I think that happened to Castro, it's going to be very, very difficult to return as long as Pizzo's there. I can't. If he was to stay in South Africa, that's the only club he would go to in terms of what he feels he wants to be paid, mm-hmm. and the only team that could really afford him. But I highly doubt it. They are looking for a striker, we know that, but I don't see it being Castro, to be honest. What do you think, Tex?
For me, sometimes I look at it this way, like, Sean, like, you know, whenever a top player is in the situation where Castro is, and there's always talks that he hasn't signed, it gives me so much courage, because the player actually knows how much he's worth. Because sometimes as players, we tend to sign too quickly because we're so excited that I'm playing for a big team, not understanding how much you're worth. And then it comes Gungundlovu Ndlovu, you know, it comes there and so much money, he does f**k, but because of you are so excited because you don't know how much you're worth. So I'm grateful that certain guys are actually doing this. Sort of, it's about time that players, you know, they're very taken seriously. So I don't see Castro going back to Mamelodi Sundowns. One, Pizzo's still there. Number two, he fought with Pizzo. Number three, guys, he fought with Pizzo. So there's no way that he can go back there and actually go and play there. Because you remember I spoke about this, the story of, you know, reheating the French fries. So
yes.
This is the same case. So he can't do that. So I think what he's trying to get at Kaizer Chiefs as well is probably we get the best deal that he could possibly get.
Yeah.
And then now by doing so, sometimes at Kaizer Chiefs, you know how they are, my friend. You're dealing with people that have been there in this game for so long, and that puts the brand in front of you first. You need to play for the badge first before you think of anything else. Times have changed. Now you're seeing players.
Sure.
So now you are Castro, you're looking at Kamo's lifestyle, you're looking at the person that you're actually striking with. You're looking at Nukovic. These are the new guys that came into the team. You're looking at them, you're comparing yourself with you, you're comparing the stats. You go to the office like, guys, I'm not worth this. I want this. My contract is about to, I'm not saying I want to bounce, but can you sort out this thing? This is perfect. I think Castro is in a driver's seat. He needs to stay there, but I don't see him playing for another big team in the country. So Kaizer Chiefs actually suits him better. So let him stay there. That he didn't get the best deal.
For sure. And to add on to what you're saying, Castro is probably looking at the whole situation with their transfer ban and going, I can really squeeze Chiefs for every penny that they're willing to offer me. Like I can push this all the way, because Chiefs can't afford to let any crucial players go. And so, you know, because they don't know when they'll be able to replace them. And they'd have to use youth players. Who knows what will happen there. But as we wrap up the car wash, we always look at a car of the week. Sean, lavababoom.
So we'll stick to our friend Ronaldinho. And Simon off air asked me how would he have afforded his bail. Well, I presume he could have sold one of his 13 cars. So we'll talk about one of them. He's got a Rolls Royce Phantom, a black and yellow one. It looks super sick. Designed in England, this four-door V12 eight-speed gearbox sits under the ultra-luxury class of cars. Top speed of 250 kilometers per hour, 0 to 100 in 5.3 seconds, which is still bloody quick for the size of the car. The only thing about this is you can't bloody park it. It's so big. coming in at a whopping 10 million SA rant.
Oh,
crazy.
Oh, my God. Oh, crazy. My goodness. That is hectic. I mean, look, Ronaldinho, of course, would have bought a lot of cars during his playing time. But I wonder what he had to do to get like a proper permission from a dealership to buy that Rolls Royce, because that is, I mean, that's big money right there.
You know what, Slew? At that level, but it's probably sponsored, eh?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe Rolls Royce was just like, look, Ronaldinho, just drive this car, man.
Yeah.
We gotta sell some Phantoms.
Take it.
But I think, you know, Ronaldinho being released from prison might be a lot of motivation for other players. But if they haven't been motivated by that, Sean Roberts is also able to give you a quote of the week.
I love your intros. They're getting better and better. So this motivation, I love this one, as me personally, I do this every morning in my meditation. So Aubrey Madiba said, set a goal so high that it makes sense you want to jump out of bed in the morning. Damn.
I like
nice
that.
Nice one. I like that.
Very, thank very you, good.
And I so think that you should... wrote that one, Teko. I don't think anyone wrote that for him. I think you
I think that Kekana boy, the one that wrote it for him.
Well, there you go, guys.
One of his friends wrote it for him. I don't see Obi writing that shit.
Chappie's paper, brother.
Did you know?
Well, there you go, guys. If you need some motivation to get out of bed when you're working from home, that will do you for the next week, at least until we're right back in your eardrums once more. But to Sean and Deco, thank you very much for joining me. This has been episode 22 of The Car Wash. We shall see you when we see you.
Thank you, guys.
Today is a great day for Car Wash.
Yeah, sure. Car Wash. This is The Car Wash on Sokola Duma Radio. This is a Hangana Corner.